This is Don Bell reporting from Manila. As I stood in the control tower overlooking the C-54 transport plane out of which were stepping the Jap representatives who are to receive surrender orders from the Supreme Allied Commander, my most persistent thought was, what is General Willoughby thinking as he salutes the Jap representative? You see, General Willoughby was here in Manila in 1941 when it all began. He left with General MacArthur to help organize the defense in the Southwest Pacific. He returned with General MacArthur, and today was his day, for it was Major General Charles A. Willoughby who received the Jap representative, escorted him to General MacArthur's headquarters, where they were still closeted a few minutes ago, probably for the necessary job of checking credentials preliminary to the instructions which are to be delivered tomorrow. That scene at the airport will live forever in memory. The field was roped off. MPs were everywhere, alert and watching, lest someone in the crowd do a little off-the-record negotiating with a carbine or an M1, both of which are still plentiful among guerrilla outfits. As the door of the plane was opened, a tense silence settled over the enormous, roped-off crowd of people who came for a glimpse of history in the making. There were 16 Japs in the plane. Colonel S.F. Moshbeer, as official translator and interrogator, entered the plane. Directed the Jap representatives to come out in order of rank. A few seconds later, they began walking down the ladder onto the Philippine soil, which such a short time ago they controlled and then damaged so cruelly as they left. Now they were back again on Philippine soil, but as the representatives of a defeated people this time, not as conquerors. Back this time to take orders, not to give them. General Willoughby's orders were crisp and clear. He said, the cars are waiting. Let us get in and go. They did. Of the 16 Jap representatives, 15 wore the uniform of dull, dreary green, and over each left shoulder was draped a darker green fourragère. From each left hip dangled a long samurai sword, the sword too long for the short-statured owner to let it hang freely from the belt, for the sword would have dragged the ground, might have tripped the wearer. So each sword was carried at the balance in the left hand. As each of the 15 uniformed figures approached General Willoughby and the 11 other representatives of the Allied command, a right hand came up to a salute. One Japanese was dressed in civilian clothes, a white summer suit and a green jockey cap on his head. He wore no other identifying insignia which we could see from the control tower. After the 16 Japanese envoys had saluted and stopped, awaiting orders, then General Willoughby said simply, the cars are waiting, let us get in and go. And history was made today as simply as that. This is Don Bell reporting from Manila. I now return you to Mutual in the United States. This is Don Bell reporting from Manila. Even as the first representative of the Japanese government came with trailing sword to seek instructions concerning the method of securing peace from General MacArthur, a report was broadcast from Tokyo to Manila, which belied the Jap admission of defeat. The radiogram, which has as yet been neither confirmed nor denied by General MacArthur's headquarters, declares that some of our forces landed on Chisima Island yesterday, and that the Jap forces there were obliged to resort to arms for self-defense. The message continues, now that hostilities between both parties having been prohibited, it is earnestly requested that the hostile action will soon be ceased. End of message. Actually, the message has people laughing. Whether or not it be true that our forces have landed on Chisima, and we are expecting word soon, the servicemen in Manila, listening to General MacArthur's orders to the Japanese government, were under the impression that Japan and all its islands were to be occupied, and that the Allied Supreme Commander would dictate the method and the time of occupation. Now they are wondering if, when they move to Japan to occupy the home island, will Tokyo then declare that its army must resort to arms in self-defense? Earlier in the day, it was reported that Jap fighter planes had again attacked our reconnaissance planes over Japan, had killed a photographer and wounded two. We seem to remember that Tokyo's own previous messages promised that resistance in the home islands would cease within 48 hours, and it did not. Now, says G.I. Joe, them Japs don't know we equipped them yet. They're still shooting at us. The seeming incongruity of a Jap protest over occupation of an island at the very moment when a Jap representative is in Manila discussing the method by which our forces are to occupy every Jap island is a matter which should be a real tip-off to what may come in the future if Allied control of defeated troublemakers is not complete and continuously watchful. This is Don Bell reporting from Manila. I now return you to Mutual in the United States.
Standing by.
This is Don Bell reporting from Manila. On this day of prayer, which President Truman has dedicated to our heroic war dead, I wish to take you, by way of the spoken word, not to a church in a Quonset hut, not to a church filled with worshiping servicemen, but to a different type of cathedral. A cathedral high among the hills and pines of northern Luzon. A cathedral where over 5,000 of our war dead lay. A cathedral of nature. I wish to take you to a GI cemetery in lovely Santa Barbara, North Luzon. My words are not original, but I can do no better than borrow the words of a fellow war correspondent, Bill Bellotti, who visited this cemetery and wrote the following words to his newspaper, the Omaha World Herald. There they were in neat white rows as far as the eye could see. Here they lay together, side by side. The private first class beside the general. The lieutenant colonel beside the sergeant. Here in death, their burial had been as impartial as the enemy bullets that had struck them down. Although they were more than 10,000 miles away from home, a bit of their beloved states was with them, even in death. Morning glory, buttercups, and the other flowers native to their home states are beginning to grow there. The three Nebraska soldiers who made the seemingly endless journey through the long lanes of crosses with me seemed to tread more softly as they clutched their battered army hats in their hands. They paused now and then and whispered a name. They were among friends. A sudden tropical storm was coming up as we left the cemetery. There was a sudden roll of thunder in the darkened skies like the muffled roar of artillery in the distance. Nature's salute to the boys who had fought and fell at the Lady Pass, Lingayan Gulf, the Villa Verde Trail, Baguio. But the rain that followed, that was for the morning glory, the buttercups, the flowers they knew at home. This is Don Bell reporting from Manila. I now take you to Paul Manning, attached to Advanced Fleet Headquarters on Guam.
Stand by for level, Mutual. Stand by for level. It'll be 30 seconds before we go ahead. Do you think we better try it?
This is Charles Minor, reporting for Mutual in Manila. 5 minutes of history was made in Manila this afternoon. Official emissaries of the Emperor of Japan landed at Nichols Field at 5:45 Manila time. Their mission? To arrange for the first surrender in Japan's 26 centuries of history. For the American flight crew that brought Lieutenant General Kawabe Takashiro and his surrender party, the trip was uneventful. However, Captain Paul D. Lipscomb of Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, one of the officers on the flight, is here to tell Mutual listeners just what happened. Captain Lipscomb, would you say this was the most exciting flight you have ever made?
Well, the flight itself was routine. Frankly, I never expected to have such passengers as these on my plane.
Was there any sort of a ceremony when you met the Japs on Iwo Jima?
There was no ceremony as far as our crew was concerned. We were busy placing the baggage in the cabin to make sure of proper trim of the airplane. There was a big crowd of spectators and plenty of military police around. The whole trip was lined with people, but as far as we were concerned, it was just an ordinary flight.
Were the Japs friendly or sullen or just indifferent?
With the possible exception of Lieutenant General Takashiro, they seemed to enjoy the flight. They were greatly interested in the airplane. It's a C-54, and they evidently enjoyed the scenery. The big boy was very much drawn into himself and wouldn't talk. I didn't see him smile the whole trip, but I did see some smiles from the others.
Did the chaps do much talking on the flight?
Not much. After they were fed early in the flight, most of them relaxed and slept a greater part of the way.
Did they bring their own food, or did you feed them?
Well, we gave them food from the U.S. Army supplies we got at Hiroshima. Box lunches, as a matter of fact. Hard-boiled eggs, peanut butter and cheese sandwiches, bully bee sandwiches, pineapple and grapefruit juice, and one pickle apiece. They ate hardly, except for the general. He must have lost his appetite, because all he ate was one hard-boiled egg.
Did the Japs enjoy their sleep as much as they seemed to enjoy their food?
Well, they at least tried to make themselves comfortable, just as any airline passenger does in the States. They took their swords off, removed their coats, and some even took their boots off. A number one boy lived up to his rank and kept his boots on as well as his dignity.
So the big boy wouldn't take his boots off, eh? By the way, when you saw all those Japanese swords rattling around, did you expect a wave of harikiri?
No, I didn't expect anything like that, although I was surprised to see that they had come armed. Some of them even had pistols as well as swords.
Captain Lipscomb, what were your own feelings? Were you elated?
Naturally, I was thrilled. It was a big moment. Mostly, I think I was thrilled because it means something is really being done to get the war over.
By the way, Captain, how long have you been in the Army?
It'll be 3 years the 1st of November. I was a pilot with Pan American Air Ferries and joined the Army in Miami, Florida.
Where have you served since you joined the Army, Captain?
Besides domestic ferrying in the United States, I've done ferrying over both North and South Atlantics. And for more than a year now, I've been flying the ATC schedule runs over the Pacific.
Are you a married man, Captain Lipscomb?
No, my home is with my parents in Patterson Heights, Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. I've lived there most of my life and went to Geneva College there. I was interested in aviation, so I learned to fly through a civilian pilot training early in 1940. That civilian pilot training program has supplied the Army with a lot of good pilots, and I'm certainly glad I took it up.
Yes, I've heard that from a lot of Air Force officers. And now, Captain Lipscomb, what are your personal plans after the war? Will you stay in aviation?
I certainly hope to. I'd like to get into commercial aviation as a pilot on one of the major airlines, preferably in overwater flying rather than domestic. All the Army experience I've had, both the type of airplane and the type of operation, should be some use, and I hope to make the most of them.
Thank you very much, Captain Lipscomb. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard Captain Pearl D. Lipscomb, co-pilot on the plane that brought the Japanese surrender delegation to Manila this afternoon. Captain Lipscomb shared the flying time with Colonel Earl T. Hicks, who was in charge of the mission. This is Charles Minor, returning to Mutual in the United States.